Welcome to the Begin the Begin podcast. My name is Jeff Hillemeyer, and I'm on a mission to find out what makes people tick. Not just anyone, people who are making a profound impact on the world. I want to dig into their origin story and get to the root of why and how they do what they do. I hope you are as inspired coming out of these conversations as I am. Let's get into it. On this episode, I chat with a friend of mine and one of my favorite Atlanta leaders, Nate Hibble. Nate is the founder and CEO of Gusto, a fast casual restaurant that is a favorite in my household. We talk about Nate's journey from playing quarterback in the NFL to putting everything on the line to create a purposeful culinary business. And hey, while I've got you, definitely consider subscribing on whatever platform you're listening on. I have a lot of great guests lined up that, trust me, you won't want to miss. Okay, let's get into it. All right, I finally got him on the podcast. Nate Hibble, tell everybody who you are and what you do.
Morning, Jeff. Thank you for having me. My name's Nate, and I am the creator of Gusto, a healthier fast casual / fast food idea and growing brands in and around Atlanta. And it's kind of weird to say what you do. This is what I'm doing at this phase in my life, Jeff. I feel like like most people, had four or five different mini lifetimes in here, but we're 6 years into growing Gusto as a brand. And really, other than 2020 being, you know, brutal for everybody, I'm having the time of my life. You know, I'm living an American dream. And I think being a former athlete, people are like, you know, it's your American dream's a little different than most. But I mean, I started at the bottom chasing this entrepreneurial path. So I'm just really proud and full of gratitude for where we are.
Awesome. And we're going to get into some of that past. I'm curious, do you have a favorite dish at Gusto at this point, or is that like having a favorite child?
Yeah, I mean, really the idea was I wanted to invent a place that I would go to three times a week. 10, 12 years ago, I just wanted grilled chicken and fruits and vegetables and flavor. And Chick-fil-A's grilled chicken sandwich just was not very good. Chick-fil-A grilled chicken sandwich in a fruit cup, I could get that in many places, but it wasn't great. It's a lot better now. Kudos to Chick-fil-A. Their grilled chicken sandwich is much better now. But and I would go to places like Moe's and Willie's, like a lot of folks who are paying attention to what they're eating was doing in this town, but healthy fast casual just really wasn't here. So to answer your question, some days, you know, what's your gusto is kind of our key phrase. And some days it's tzatziki lemon artichoke, some days it's chipotle mango avocado, some days it's chili sesame barbecue. The idea was a little pop of Korean, a little pop of the Mediterranean, a little pop of Southwest, but done well and done quickly.
Got it. Well, the chipotle mango is my favorite, but I have to tell you, my wife's favorite ice cream, okay, is the s'mores Ben and Jerry's, and they discontinued it. Mm. And Gusto is her favorite fast casual place to eat, and her favorite meal was the portobello one.
Okay.
And we're not seeing that anymore when she makes her orders to be delivered to our house. Has that also been discontinued?
Well, so the adventure now, you know, I spent years working on inventing this menu and trying to figure out what this monster was going to be, what the colors were, what was the name, how to characterize, what were the steps, how did the kitchen correlate, etc. And now I'm in a spot where I'm having to, you know, when you go from two restaurants to four, and then from four to 10, and then from 10 to 100, your business challenges and strategies change, right? So I guess long story short, I'll just head on address portobello mushrooms, because I mean the amount of notes we get every day on Instagram or email or text or whatever, everybody's a critic, everybody's got an opinion.
Of course.
Go to this market, you'll crush it. That's my least favorite, because that's typically non-business people that don't know what crushing actually means. But you know, menu items are the hardest. And Jeff, I used to take it very personally, and I'd get very sensitive and even defensive. And one of our values in action nowadays is first to listen. So the world we live in is not listening. You know, we're not listening to each other. So, and values in action can be aspirational. We're damn sure not doing this all day, every day. But it's a high bar. And first to listen means we receive critical feedback. We say, thank you for giving us a chance to get better. So I would tell your wife that portobello mushrooms early on fell under our protein category. And vegetarians would come in and say, mushrooms are not protein. And I would say, yeah, I understand. But it's our version. True vegetarians have wanted tofu for a long time. So we added tofu, but the fact of the matter is we lost 20 to 25% of our revenue in 2020, because catering disappeared and portobello mushrooms, grilled portobello mushrooms were a key differentiator for us in a catering game, but they represented truly, tell your wife, less than 6-7% of people who ordered bowls in our restaurant as part of our core menu. And 6-7%, as hard as they are and as expensive as they are to do real ones, we just got to the point where we said they're not worth it. And we replace them with what we're calling umami tofu, where we're trying to mimic some of the savory umami flavor of a mushroom on the tofu rub. Last but not least, I'll tell you, Jeff, we've also introduced focus groups into our how do we make decisions, and we are testing Baby Bellas this Saturday at Chamblee on the patio. If you're around, swing by, and if it goes well, we may reintroduce Baby Bellas onto our menu, not as a protein but as an adder for the bowl. So my goal is by mid-March your wife can have her missing mushrooms.
I love it. Well, I told her I would ask, but it just the way that she still remains loyal to Ben and Jerry's overall, she's certainly still loyal to you guys. So I told her, I said, look, he's going to have a good answer. They don't discontinue a product that's profitable and selling well. So
yeah, what we found is that the things that don't sell that well, they have the most passionate followers. Mm. Like if something's 3%, 4%, 5%. Yeah, you're right. It's a no-brainer business-wise. We have to take it off and we have to disappoint. But the passion that comes with buffalo as a gusto, the passion that comes with mushrooms as a gusto, the passion that comes with apple curry peanut, which was an early dish. These people are so loud. We're listening. Yep. We're going to do the best we can. We can't have everything, but we're the best we can do is listen.
Yep. Understood. And I like that strategy. Okay. I want to go back. Where did you grow up? I think I know, but.
Grew up in South Georgia, really small town, yep. Hazelhurst, Georgia.
Okay. I'm going to take a guess and I could be way off. I've been off on this lately. Are you the oldest?
I am.
Okay. And what do you got siblings wise?
I have one brother and he and I are really tight. He's my hero. Amazing man. He's a head men's golf coach at the University of Oklahoma. And they're number one in the country right now for anybody listening. I'm very proud.
Wow. Nice. It does seem to be a trait, the overachiever striving for, you know, greatness. A lot of times that's the older. I get that right maybe 60-70% of the time. You probably, and you can tell me, but did you grow up, given that you ended up playing quarterback at a great Division I college. Did you grow up thinking I want to play football? Is that my career?
You know, it's funny you should ask. I actually grew up dreaming about playing on the PGA Tour. My brother and I were legitimate junior golfers growing up. A lot of guys that are on tour right now, Ryan and I know, we grew up playing junior golf with. And we had a little nine-hole golf course in Hazelhurst, and it's still my favorite golf course of all time. So many memories. But the dream for me was having fresh, brand-new shirts every day and a bag full of brand-new Titleists in my bag. That was truly what I was dreaming of when I was younger. Football didn't become a reality for me until about ninth grade. I was 6'3", 190, and had a pretty good arm. And it's like, wait a second. And then the next couple years, I had some decisions on my hand. I had to let go of basketball. I had to let go of baseball. I played every sport I could growing up. And eventually, the notion of playing in front of 100,000 people on Saturday, and I think ultimately being on a team, was probably the reason I chose football, not golf. Mm. Golf is a pretty lonely sport. And being on a team is how I'm wired. I love the notion of being tight and having buddies and having nicknames and making fun of each other. And I get to live that right now with Gusto as we build a company.
I love that. And you, you played in college. Just talk about your football career from college till when it ended.
Well, real fast, I was a Jeff Davis Yellow Jacket in South Georgia, small double-A team. We ran a version of the wing T, so I wasn't a passer in high school, so I was pretty raw. Went to the University of Georgia in 1999-ish. And realized I was going to be stuck behind Quincy Carter for 2-3 years. This is a long time ago now, so I'll make this very fast. I feel old, but transferred to the University of Oklahoma and one of Bob Stoops' first recruiting classes. And a bunch of ups and downs, as one will go through as a college player, but ended up something like 20-2 or 20-3 as a starter. I started for 2 years, and culmination, MVP of the Rose Bowl 2003, ended up with the Cleveland Browns and was hired and fired 2 or 3 different times. That's how it works in the NFL. But I lived in Cleveland for about 3 years, and then 1 year with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And that was fun and amazing. And that was like living in a dream. Mm. And people always ask me, like, the strangest question I get about football is, why did you stop? Why did you stop playing in the NFL, you know? And the answer is, I wasn't freaking good enough, you know? Like, you don't stop, you know? Right. I mean, why would I stop making right. hundreds of thousands of dollars and playing a game for a living?
Yeah.
I'm not sure people really get that. It is a savage, ruthless, wonderful, amazing business. And frankly, the older I get, the only real regret I have is not talking about head safety sooner. I wish these a-holes would have been talking about this 20, 30, 40 years ago, because I've had many concussions and it's pretty damn scary.
Mm. Well, I had Muhammad Massaqua on the podcast a few months back. And obviously he stopped because he had a terrible accident and lost part of his arm. Yeah. But to see him and, you know, now, you know, building a business and see you building a business, it's interesting to me as, you know, highly ambitious athletes that come out of college, often I think find themselves in entrepreneurship. And so that's where I want to go with the conversation now is, did you ever think to yourself, I want to start a company, or was it always golf and then football? And then you sort of emerged out of that and it came to you. Like, was that in your past? Was there somebody in your family that ran a business or started a company?
I need to do more digging on my family side. One of my grandfathers was a pharmacist, owned his own business, but I think candidly, no, sir, is the answer. I didn't have a dream of being an entrepreneur. My path is more like And I think this is true for a lot of former athletes. And I think people, I say, you know, cry me a river, you're a former athlete, successful, et cetera. But a lot of former athletes that have been in a system for 15, 20 years with an itinerary, a syllabus every single day, here's how you move and act and eat and do and don't do. A lot of former athletes really struggle with depression and loneliness and what do I do? You know, and again, cry me a river, you could have been grinding and learning and getting better while you were an athlete, but I didn't have that foresight for whatever reason. And I would go back and tell people, like, work on the rest of your life while you're an athlete. It obviously doesn't last forever, but Jeff, the single reason why I'm chasing an entrepreneurial path is several things happen at the same time: the recession, a divorce, and I interviewed with banks and real estate companies and money management services and whatever those 4, 5, 6 things that one might think, you can get one of these jobs and you can go make good money and you can be regular and you can wear a suit and loafers and do that. And it just wasn't speaking to me, dude. It just wasn't speaking to me. It wasn't inspiring. So I didn't know what I was doing, but somewhere in there, because of the release and getting away from the distraction of divorce and a major life change and losing a home and going through a big change. And again, this is 10 years ago, so I don't want to rip that Band-Aid or reopen any wounds, but that freedom gave me the opportunity to not have anything to lose. Even as a 6'4", blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white dude who could, you know, in theory, do anything, a former athlete, what I realized, the real driving passion for me was to recreate myself, Jeff. And that means not Nate Hibble, a former athlete, not did you play college ball, not everything that I've been defined as, not the trophies, the articles, the magazine pictures, all the stuff that most of my life has been. This was going to be something with purpose, something different, something of my own, and something that could impact the world bigger and more importantly than wearing a jersey. And that's not to say that sports aren't very important. But a lot of athletes like me, you ask, I don't watch a ton of sports. I don't watch a ton of football. It's just on to different things, you know, and looking, chasing different passions. And I'm sorry for the long answer, but 10 years ago, I remember telling my best friend in my kitchen, I'm gonna start a healthy fast food concept. I said really scared and kind of sheepishly, and I was embarrassed, you know, but I knew it was going to put me on a path. John Mayer, this is going to be strange, but I was listening to a song of his yesterday. He said, everybody's just a stranger. That's the danger in going my own way. It, you know, entrepreneurial path is fun. It's scary. It's thrilling. It's lonely. And the idea of having a wife and 2.5 kids and your second big house in Buckhead, I didn't care about any of that. It was ears pinned back and figure this thing out.
Was it that you were looking for a sense of purpose or a sense of wanting to create or have a more meaningful life overall that sort of stopped you from getting the job in the high rise?
Yeah, well, the even easier job is to go be a coach. I mean, you can make millions of dollars. I have teammates, former teammates that are crushing it. Go be a sports reporter, go be on ESPN, go be a coach. And I didn't want anything. I was tired of it, man. Yeah. So for me, I think it was creating a new identity. It was creating a new, creating a new me. And it's not for the faint of heart, because, you know, like over 90% fail, you know? So at this point, I'm just really thankful and cherishing the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great place to be when you start a company. I can't imagine you could have picked a more foreign idea than starting a fast casual restaurant. I mean, unless you had experience, I don't know about.
No, I did. Yeah, it's pretty damn nuts when I think back. And I haven't done a good job of like founder origination storytelling, because a lot of people don't know who we are. Or they wandered in our first restaurant or two. It's like, is this a chain from Colorado? Like, what, you know, what is this? And I got to figure out how to tell the story better quickly. But I knew nothing about restaurants, dude. I knew very little, nothing about food. Nothing about HR, nothing about accounting, nothing about marketing, nothing about real estate, nothing about interest rates. I mean, shit, I knew nothing, man. And, you know, by ripping out thousands of magazine articles and food was starting to change in this country. And I was really fueled by what I was learning about fresh herb, you know, fresh dill and cilantro and the story behind sesame seeds and how popular mangoes are around the world. And I fell in love with the process, and that was the fuel. And I was blessed to cross paths with the right people at the right time and ask the right questions and be willing to whiteboard and take notes from notes and go have coffee and with people like you, studs like you, and pick brains and learn and grow and move forward. And there's a lot of ideas out there and a lot of idea people, but the doers are the ones that are having these conversations.
That's right. That's right. And one of the things, when we met years ago, I appreciated in you that I feel like I have the same, is that always, sort of always on need to learn and continue to absorb and evolve. I mean, it, you know, sometimes I think entrepreneurs that struggle the most are the ones that don't spend time talking to other entrepreneurs or leaders, don't spend time, you know, reading certain business books or bios or whatever it is. Like, but I got that from you, that, you know, you're a constant learner in this. Is that also something that was with you ever, or is that just come because you're so passionate about this?
I think I'm an analyzer. If somebody was testing me behaviorally and a psychotherapy type session, I'm an analyzer to death, 360 degrees. So I have a harder time pulling the trigger. I'm going to aim and then pull the trigger. Some people pull the trigger and then figure it out. That's not me. So I spent 5 years aiming or working on my aim. And then I pulled the trigger in late in 2014, and whatever that, once I pulled the trigger, it wasn't right. It wasn't perfect. But it was good enough to help us pay our bills and not go out of business. But that first 6 months were the hardest of my life, because the real thing that I didn't know about, that I thought I knew about, Jeff, was human beings. I've been a leader of men in huddles. I've been a quarterback. I've never been the head coach. I've never been the CEO. I've never had to write people's paychecks, and let alone white, black, Hispanic, 18-year-olds and 58-year-olds, men and women, different preferences, different orientations, just different, all these different personalities that show up in the workplace, right? And the restaurant business is infamous. So getting people to do what you want them to do as a perfectionist, that first 6 months was a crazy hard challenge. And I slept in the parking lot. I rarely left. And a lot of our early fans knew that, because I was always there. And frankly, that was the biggest hurdle to growing, was letting go of, I think being a parent is the strongest, and I haven't been a parent yet in real life, like with a human, but I think this, when you birth a concept, when you birth an idea, letting go of perfect, letting go of that child, sending them to Little League baseball practice on their own and relying on other people, It's damn hard, but of course, I wasn't going to realize the dream of growing a brand around the Southeast and maybe the country and maybe in airports worldwide without letting go. And again, God put the right people at the right time in my life, and I was willing to say yes to those people and not, I got it figured out, you know? So, yep. So that growth mindset has been critical.
Yeah. Well, I want to dig into the human side of leading your company in a second, but I am curious, given the analytic nature of your style of leadership and life, you watch the movie Founder?
You know, everybody tells me I got to watch it. I haven't. I don't know if I'm nervous about it or what, but I haven't watched it.
I think you dig it, because what the McDonald's brothers did was analyze in ways I couldn't even have imagined their first concept. So anyways, it's a fun movie.
Didn't they scale somebody else's idea?
No, Ray Kroc did. So the McDonald's brothers created the concept, but a businessman came in and really wanted to help grow them. But what they had done was revolutionize the industry, because they down to a science mapped out. There's this great scene in the movie where they're trying to figure out how to speed up the process of, you know, getting product out to the window. And they go to a tennis court and they use chalk, and they're designing from a sort of a 30,000 foot view down of what the restaurant inside should look like. And then they have their team walking through, passing, you know, fake stuff. It was such a great scene, but I think you dig it.
You know, we've done the same thing with our drive-through. We set up a mock drive-through in the parking lot in front of the old Braves Stadium down in South Atlanta. Yeah, we don't know what we're doing, you know. And I don't want to give away any trade secrets, but my version of that, frankly, is Gusto is kind of where art meets engineering, is what I wrote in our line guide, like our guys that make the food. I won't go as far as saying it's like Apple, but our line, the way our assembly line can do a lot of very colorful things very quickly. So we kind of engineered a system, and it's different than Chipotle, obviously, where you go in and you have to have a conversation and you tell somebody all the things you want. And it's audacious enough to have a chef's mentality, and like there's minimal modifications, you know, in our concept. You know, there's some things you can tweak, but for the most part, we're asking you to trust us. Yeah. And that engineering, where engineering meets art. But what we give you as a trade-off is speed. And I just don't think that speed or convenience are diminishing in value in 2021 moving forward, you know.
Yeah, I heard Bezos say something about that years before. He said, we don't think so much about what people are going to want in the future as much as we think about, you know, what they're not going to want. And they're not going to want it to take longer to get their packages, and they're not going to want it to be more expensive. And so he focuses on those core things to build his business. All right, so I want to go back to the human aspect of running your company. So I want to talk about 2020. So two major things happened, to all businesses, and I'm sure yours. I know the first happened, which is that, your business was hit hard, from a growth and revenue and profit perspective. We've talked about that, catering especially. I know my company, for instance, you know, hasn't even been in the office since March. So we weren't able to cater with you guys, but what I really want to talk more about is, the George Floyd, Black Lives Matter movement that happened. It's, you know, it's something that I have less employees than you, and I'm guessing less diverse employees than you, and it was hard for us. And I'm just curious how you went through that, how you tried to, for yourself, for your team. I got to imagine that was very difficult.
Yeah, I don't know. There was no playbook. I was emotionally upset. The country felt like in March, April, May, the country felt like it was ripping itself apart. I felt like, you know, from my parents, the generation older than me was pushing back on some ideas that they felt like were old ideas and things, you know, battles that had already been talked about and won. there's a lot of rubbing off, you know, brushing off of guilt, and let's move on. And I mean, dude, I didn't have any answers. I mean, generally our policy as I've grown this has been, let's be Switzerland on social ideas. Let's be an incredibly inclusive company, and let's celebrate individualism. If you have a ring nose, we'd love to love on you. It doesn't matter. We want you to, one of our values in action is the you and us. So, you know, and that's a slippery slope, but we're trying, you know, to get there. That's right under We Are Gusto. So where those rub up against each other, I think is a unique challenge for scaling soul and culture. And Starbucks does an amazing job, in my opinion, at that. But back to the summer, I mean, I just, that along with the virus and the presidential press conferences, it just made me sick to my stomach every night. There were a lot of questions, and there was nobody really telling me what to do, obviously. But we made the decision as leaders of our company that the best we could do was go listen. It's one of our values in action. And in the restaurant business, we say herd, half and half chicken Chipotle herd. That's one of those things I learned in the kitchens is really cool. And I've taken it, you know, with me. It's part of our culture. So we have employee herd sessions versus reviews. And that's a two-way dialogue between leader and teammate. And it is meant to be, how can we grow together? Best case scenario. So we sat down, the leadership went to every shop and invited anybody who felt like talking to us to let's have an open discussion. And we didn't do it for press, PR. We didn't talk about it. We ended up writing a big check to Matt Ryan's, whatever organization they started. I can't remember the name of it, but it was going to help build and fuel the Black communities in and around Atlanta. And for me personally, I felt like a lot of these conversations I have felt, and it kind of awakened in me, I got to do more. I got to be better. So I spoke on a couple shows. I jumped on a couple panels, and that was really Nate Hibble talking about me and the things I've learned. For years, I've gotten up in front of our team, you know, when I orientation at Gusto Decatur, and 90% of the team is Black, you know, and I tell them, you truly can't understand unless you consider walking in another's shoes. And obviously, even then, you can't comprehend and understand. But just saying things like that really goes a long ways. Our culture is defined by every single move that we make, every single word that comes out of every single one of our team members' mouths all day, every day. And that's hard, Jeff. I mean, that is the challenge I have right now, is to keep us together with the spirit of understanding what our why is and how we behave. And I'm working on that as a business leader, but I'm rambling a little bit, but what we did was we went and sat down and we listened and we had conversations, and there were tears and there was a lot of uncomfortable conversations. And we realized at a minimum, we weren't listening hard enough in terms of letting people leave early because public transportation was scary. Getting to work and getting home, and, you know, from a public transportation standpoint, people were feeling really scared. And, you know, for me personally, just the contemplation of, I know if I was a Black man or Black woman, it was very simple for me as a person. I don't mean Gusto. I know if I was a Black man or a Black woman, I would be on the front of every one of those lines. I would be passionately, you know, peacefully, you know, but I would be getting after it, because it was apparent to me that there were two different justice systems, and we could go on and on and on and on. But as a business leader, the best thing I could do was to show all of our humans that we cared as best we could, and that we were listening, and that we would try to do better, and that we would educate our leadership. And two rooms from me right now are about 10 of my leaders, and, you know, 80% of that room is Black, and that's our leadership team. So I think some progress has been made, and who am I to say? I'm a 41-year-old dude. I mean, I certainly don't have all the answers, but I feel like we still have a long ways to go, and the generation above me just doesn't want to hear that. Yep. And that was the bottom line for me.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And that was that. The herd sessions, that sounds amazing. I love that lesson. I think also what I'd love to sort of spend the last couple minutes here on is purpose. You know, I think there's two sort of, I don't know, I'll call them teams that people can be on that naturally have purpose. One is a sports team. That team knows why it's there. It all is marching toward the same goal. Everybody's passionate about that goal. You're trying to win the championship. You're trying to do whatever. It's very clear. And then nonprofits. Nonprofits have purpose built in. You work at a nonprofit because you want to end homelessness in Atlanta, because you want to, you know, make sure that every child has, you know, an education, whatever it is. I think it's really hard in a for-profit business to find that. And for me, one of the things that I can sort of relate to you on is that I was a Division I college athlete, but was not good enough to really even be in the top, you know, four on my tennis team, right? So I was on the team, but never thought I could go beyond that. But being on my team, you know, that camaraderie of we're all in this together, right? It's hard to do that in a business, I think. And that's one of the things I strive for with my companies is how do I find that? And I know you've been working on purpose and certainly values help and everything, but can you talk to me just a moment about where you're landing or how you're working on purpose for Gusto?
Yes, sir. I'd be happy to. You know, you can write down stuff in business plans, and I probably wrote 25 of them. What is our why and how and when and who and all that. And that stuff evolves and changes over time. 6 years into the business, last year, I settled into a purpose or a brand promise. And I don't know how it got through my thick skull or heart, Jeff, but it was centered around, I kept hearing the same word in every conversation that I would have from our corporate or base team all the way to the new hire. And that word was grow. And I think in the restaurant business, as hard as it is, and it's a son of a gun. I mean, it's really hard. Retail's brutal, 7 days a week, 6 a.m. to 11 p.m., 7 days a week. For those of you not in the industry, please respect. I mean, it's very, very hard. Right. But I chose it. So, you know, get over, you know, figure it out, get over it. But I think the cool responsibility and opportunity that we have in the restaurant business, as hard as it is somebody without a junior high education can have a career. Somebody without any education can make $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year with us. What an amazing opportunity, right? That's cool. But it takes a lot of work. And every single team member or candidate always say, I see you got a cool concept, man. And I see you're growing. I want to grow. And then I heard author, I'm blanking on his name right now, but talking about the notion of pruning. Mm-hmm. And I love plants, and I may have a dream of having a tree farm one of these days, but if you come to my place, there are 30 plants inside. It's a little freaky, a little much probably, but it hit me in that pruning is a version of growing as well. And what is that? How does that translate in the business world? That means letting go. That means saying goodbye. And cutting something off in order to form new growth. So taking the word grow, which I heard in damn near every conversation somewhere, because these humans were hungry, I got to intentionally fostering growth, to intentionally foster growth, to intentionally foster growth. That is our line of accountability. And everything has got to filter through intentionally fostering growth. And the reason why I knew it was going to work or feel good, Jeff, is because that applies to our product. We want our product to foster growth with new ingredients and get Joe the plumber on, you know, less afraid of mangoes and trying our dish. And all of a sudden he loves mangoes, because I'm a walking testimony of that. To intentionally fostering growth with our teammates, to intentionally fostering growth in our communities. We want to make our neighbors proud. We want folks to say, you see, we got a gusto, not, oh, another Zaxby's opened up. You know what I mean? No offense, but to intentionally fostering growth with our impacts and our investments. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. So there's a lot there. Obviously intentional means what it means. Foster, you know, like a baby to take care of and grow and nourish, and sometimes chop off. And then growth, it is what it is. So we're at the infant stage of what it is, but I think there's hopefully a lot of opportunity there.
Well, it has two things that I love about a purpose statement. One is that it's nice and tight. It's not some long flowing sentence that nobody can memorize. Intentionally foster growth. I mean, that's powerful. And then it also is multidimensional, to your point. It can literally be what you're doing every day as you're serving people, but it can also be refer to your employees. It can actually refer to the company itself. So I think that's a huge home run. I love it. And I can't wait to see you continue to bring that into action. Okay. Last question for you. I always like to ask my guests, what are a couple of your favorite books of all time? Like, are there a couple of books you've read 4 or 5 times over the years? Is there, it could be something you read in high school. It could be something you read last week. Is there a couple that you would point people to that just really affected you?
Pour Your Heart Into It by Howard Schultz. I'm reading for the second time right now. Good to Great is amazing. Lord of the Rings, The Wizard of Oz. You know, I'm a sci-fi dork. The business books are amazing because I find myself underlining and regurgitating and sending to my guys. But I learn more about the differences in human beings in the Star Wars, in the Lord of the Rings, in the, you know, it's all the same shit, man. I mean, different races and these different challenges, you know, and I'm getting off topic at times, but I've always wanted to embrace being the rebel scum, you know, just like the good guys and the underdog that everybody is rooting for. I got off book and into movie just a touch, but, you know, I'm a strange one, because you probably never had this answer, man. I get more fulfillment out of reading and looking at magazines than I do books these days. And I don't know if it's because that's the way I'm wired and I love colors and shapes and stories. I don't know if it's because they're shorter and not, you know, don't require as big a commitment. But whenever I get on an airplane, I usually get on that airplane with 10 magazines and I come off crazy inspired.
What are a couple of your go-tos?
I mean, the entrepreneurial magazines, the food magazines, the fashion magazines, the innovative, the magazines going after innovation. I'm really drawn to the cover. You know, it's not just Fast Company, right? Something intrigues me. I'm gonna grab it. I'm gonna spend a ridiculous $12 or whatever it is. But there's just something about I love design. So the pops of passion and the colors and the quick stories are amazing and high quality magazines to me. Random answer.
I haven't had that answer. That's great. I love it. Have you read Ender's Game?
I haven't read Ender's Game. Is it the same?
Yes. Same as the movie.
Yeah. I've seen
the movie. You got to read that book, man. That's how Dragon Army got named. It's really? From that book. Yeah, it's a sci-fi book, but it's I think it's the most awarded sci-fi book of all time, something like that. It's fantastic, man. You'd love it.
Is that the formation they get in, or he got thrown in that group? The main character gets thrown.
He ends up on the team. Yeah, that's right. Yes.
A retired group.
Yes. Yeah. It's called Dragon Army, his team. Yeah. Fortunately, we had started the company before the movie came out, and we got to take everybody. And it was like, as soon as Dragon Army was mentioned, everybody went nuts.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. But you should check it out. Nate, thanks so much for joining me today. I've been a fan of yours, and a friend of yours since we met years ago. But it's always fun for me when we order from your place, because again, it's a family favorite, and it's always so good. And I know you put such care into building this company. So you're going to inspire a lot of people by sharing your journey. And if there's anything I can do to help, please let me know.
You're the man. You know, you have an incredible humility about you, Jeff, and not to be a praise fest, but the benevolent entrepreneurs, thoughtful people who care about humans and their communities, and not just buzzwords and not just Instagram. I'm a big fan of yours as well. And hopefully Dragon Army and your business returns, and, you know, God be with us, you know, with a name like Gusto that stands for passion with an exclamation point, we have a high bar of expectations and accountability. So we're going to keep doing it. We're going to keep growing. Let's go have coffee soon, and I need to hear more from you.
Count on it. We'll do it. Thanks again, Nate.
Thank you.
Wow, you made it to the end of the podcast. I didn't think people did that anymore. Well, since I still have you, I'd love for you to do two things. First, subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. That way you'll be alerted as soon as I post my next one. And second, I'd love for you to subscribe to my email newsletter. I send out an email every week or two, and it's really where I share my more personal thoughts and ideas. Plus, I give stuff away sometimes. You can find the sign up at my blog, jeffhillemeyer.com, and I really do appreciate you listening.